I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Dr. Matthew Polk. He's the executive director of Prosper Waco, a nonprofit working to improve the health, education, and financial security of our community. Also, commercial realtor Greg Gleim is in studio for a new segment called What's Happening Here. But first, it's the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News. You're seeing the shadow of a haggard, tired father of a newborn in desperate need of a pick-me-up. What I really want is a cut in conversation, a shave in sarcasm, a time machine to take me back to before my life was only diaper changes and sleepless nights. For nearly a century, it served as a community watering hole, and it's not just because they have great barbers. It's because they treat their customers like their family. So hop in the chair with me, and let's shine the small business spotlight on the Jockey Club. The Jockey Club opened in 1916 in downtown Waco on 131 South 2nd Street. It was the first black-owned barbershop in Waco, and it quickly became a force in downtown. In 1944, Ben Smith bought the business, and shortly thereafter, in 1958, welcomed Lloyd Dugas to the fold. Lloyd, that was a pretty long time ago. What was Waco like for you working at the Jockey Club in 1958?
Well, I got to the Jockey Club when I stopped there. I was going to get a chair in Houston, and I met some guys in Houston that was from Waco, and they encouraged me to not work in Houston because it's so dangerous. And they told me about the Jockey Club in Waco.
And when you got to the Jockey Club, what did you find there in 1958? What did downtown Waco look like?
Well, it looked so very different. And when I got to the Jockey Club barbershop, there was a chair waiting on me because one guy just had left, and I had a chair open for me. Then I started there then.
This feels really good. So, Miles, did you start working here after the Jockey Club reopened?
Yes, sir.
So after 2016?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Sure did.
And why did you decide to come over to the Jockey Club?
I got my hair cut here when I was 8 or 9 years old.
So you got your hair cut at the Jockey Club when they were still on 2nd Street downtown?
Yes, sir. And the chair that I have now is actually Ben Frank's chair. That was my barber when I was a kid.
This chair I'm sitting in right now is Ben Frank's chair.
Right.
Wow, Ben Frank Smith, what a legend.
Yes, sir.
He seems like a guy who really cared about his community, and he realized that the best way that he could care for his community was by having a barbershop. How do you feel that Elm Avenue is doing right now? Do you sense there's more people who are interested in it and trying to be a part of it?
Well, I have to be honest, I'm grateful for change. I'm a man of change, and I believe in change. And we're not going forward if we don't change. So I'm grateful to see businesses opening up on Elm. I'm grateful to see the revitalization of the community. And it's just always a blessing for our youth in the community to see great things being done instead of where to stagnate.
Mm.
So, since Paul Quinn left, you know, we've been on a decline. So glad to see Lula James doing what she's doing, Rappaport doing what they're doing, Tony Damaris is doing a great job. And
appreciate you,
well, thanks, man.
Thank all
you.
Right, you be blessed now.
Oh, man. I haven't been shaved in a minute. This feels good. Now that Miles has worked his magic, I'm feeling totally refreshed by the clip and filled up by the community. The Jockey Club is truly an East Waco treasure. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, shining the small business spotlight on the Jockey Club. That was the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank, with three convenient locations in Waco, including an expanded branch downtown at the corner of Franklin and 4th. Visit wacobusinessnews.com or find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Waco Business News to watch the Small Business Spotlight video featuring Lloyd Dugan and Miles Adonandis, two past and present barbers at the Jockey Club. I'm thrilled to welcome Greg Glyman to the KWBU studio. Greg is a commercial real estate expert, joining me for a segment called What's Happening Here, where we dive into the stories of properties around town. Greg, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Yeah, this is exciting.
So this is going to be a really fun segment, Greg. If there's a building that you pass by every day on your way to work, or maybe you've always been curious about what's happening there, find Waco Business News on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or find Greg on Facebook and submit an address. We might just discuss it here on Downtown Depot, giving you valuable info about your next investment property or maybe a new storefront for your business. Greg, you've helped put the restaurant Milo All Day into the former Big Green Automotive building there at 11th and Franklin. There are a couple available spaces there. What kinds of tenants are you guys looking for, and what kind of financial commitment would a business need to go into a beautiful space like Milo?
Yeah, they did a great job, and just to make sure we're clear on that, they worked the deal, as I understand it, directly with the owners of that property, and so it's kind of, I wasn't a part of the entire Milo process of them going in. However, they did an excellent job, and I don't know if you remember whether listeners remember what that looked like prior to them doing the renovation, but it was a Big Green Automotive garage, and now it's hands down one of the coolest buildings in downtown, and it's at the face of our downtown. Milo Restaurant is exceptional in and of itself. We've got two spaces on both ends of the building. They may have plans to enter into one. I think initially they did, and that's not off of the table yet. But I've had a lot of feedback. You know, the visibility is so good driving down Franklin and entering into downtown right there. So
and you're right across from Balcones, which is awesome.
Yeah, you are. And it's its own little kind of district right there and becoming one. And so we've had anybody from tech companies to attorneys, general office use, some retail clothiers looking at the space. Who ends up going in there? I don't know. That's what we're working for. We've been marketing it for about 10, 15 days now, and I would say we're at a level 10 of interest on that. And I think that just speaks to the type of building it is, how the quality of construction. For someone to sign a lease in there, it's really not as hard as you think. It's probably easier than signing a lease in a duplex or an apartment complex. A lot of times people are scared to enter into the realm of signing commercial leases. Or have been stuck in a place for 5-6 years and haven't even thought about leaving. And there's enough activity and enough traction downtown and new developments forming that I get a lot of calls with people saying, hey, what are my possibilities? I should get more calls because there are more possibilities out there than what people think and probably some better options. So the Milo space has been exciting. They did an awesome job again, and I bet you we have someone in there within the next couple weeks.
So what are y'all trying to get per square foot at the Milo space?
You know, we're in the range, and it's all negotiable. Whenever you're talking about these commercial leases,
always negotiable. A good thing to know in any business transaction.
That's right. Negotiate it. However, all these shell spaces, there's a lot that goes into it. In the sense of it's got to be built out. Whenever you do one of these conversions of an older building downtown, with that comes who's going to put the flooring in, who's going to paint. And it's all an easy process to get through, but there's a lot of points to talk about doing that. TI refers to tenant improvement allowance, which a landlord gives a tenant to finish out their space. So we're going to end up in the range of $18 to $21, $22 a square foot, depending on the lease structure. And that's an annual rate. Plus your triple nets on top of that.
So if it's a 1,000 square foot space and I want to put my coffee shop in there, I would need to have, you know, $22,000 of rent every year.
That's exactly right.
Cool.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Well, Greg, I really appreciate you coming on Downtown Depot because you're so good. And it's going to be helpful for me even to distill some of these kind of scary practices. You know, if you're someone outside of commercial real estate, you might get scared by price per square foot or tenant improvement or triple nets. And throughout the process of having you here on What's Happening Here, we're going to be talking about some more of that stuff and making all of our listeners more familiar and less scared about jumping into this world of commercial real estate, whether it's for their own business or whether it's for something, an investment. Information from Greg Glyme, Greg Double G Glyme. You can find him on Facebook
And Greg's going to be joining us monthly for the next few months to talk about what's happening here. Once again, find us on Waco Business News and submit that address. We'll do the legwork and give you all the info you need to know about your next storefront. Greg, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Dr. Matthew Polk is the executive director of Prosper Waco, which has a mission to measurably improve the health, education, and financial security of the Waco community through collective impact. Dr. Polk, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thanks for having me.
How did you get started here in Waco?
Yeah, so my wife and I were Baylor undergraduates back in the late 90s, graduated 2001, stayed around Waco for a year after graduation. My wife taught over at Rappaport Academy, the charter school here in Waco, loved her kids, loved teaching, and I was involved to some degree in her work and with her students at the school. We left for 6 years and did graduate work. And then came back in 2008, so I've been back for about a decade, raising our kids here, and came back, initially worked at Rappaport Academy myself in an administrative role for several years, and then transitioned over to the Prosper Waco role in the beginning of 2015.
If any Downtown Depot listeners have some airline miles they're trying to burn through, I would encourage them to look this up, the Forward Cities Member City Workshop. Forward Cities has collaborated with CEOs for cities, and they're putting on this workshop June 4th through 6th in Durham, North Carolina, where they're talking about accelerating inclusive innovation. You've been a part of this panel in years past. What is inclusive innovation?
Yeah. So I think, you know, it comes back to this word talent, right? That's something that city leaders, mayors, and others are thinking about all the time, is how do you attract well-educated, talented, motivated, entrepreneurial people to your city, because that's what creates vibrancy, that's what creates culture, that's what creates economic development, that's what creates a place where people want to live. And so I think that those two pieces of inclusiveness, meaning you're creating an environment in a community where people from all different backgrounds, whether it's educational background, you know, racial, cultural, whatever, feel like there's a place for them there. And then that innovation piece is, you know, what are you doing that's new, exciting, vibrant, that entrepreneurial, that gives people that sense of, wow, there's an opportunity for me here. If I have an idea for a business or if there's something that I want to do, there's an opportunity to do it there. So I think those two pieces of inclusivity and innovation are really what attracts talent. And I think that's the point of those types of conversations, is to say, what are cities across the country doing to make themselves attractive to really smart, diverse, motivated groups of people, especially young people, but not just young people.
You're reminding me of a conversation I had with now city council person Andrea Bearfield on here a few months ago, and we were discussing Elm Avenue and the revitalization of East Waco. And she said, and it's stuck with me since then, we have to ensure what's happening in East Waco happens not just to East Waco, but with East Waco.
Right.
And it has to be inclusive. If the development that happens along Elm is going to be successful, it's going to be because the people in the neighborhood can participate and
right.
They can buy in.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to that old cliche of a rising tide lifting all ships. You know, if it's not, something's wrong. If the prosperity and the improvement that you're seeing in a community or in a city is not felt and experienced by everybody, then it's not going to last. It's not going to be sustainable. It's not going to grow on itself. And so, you know, there are lots of ways to say, man, we want our highest performers, our best companies, our best, you know, entrepreneurs to be successful in what they're doing. But we also want to create an environment where the small business person or the individual community member or somebody who traditionally hasn't felt like they're, you know, really well integrated into the community has a chance, you know, to show their stuff and to be the best they can be and to be successful as well.
What are the origins of the Prosper Waco project?
Sure. So Prosper Waco is a community initiative. You know, I usually refer to its origin as being a mayoral initiative. You know, our former mayor, Malcolm Duncan Jr., really put his flag in the ground, so to speak, and said the issue of poverty broadly, but across these three domains of education, health, and financial security, this is a key issue for Waco right now in, you know, 2013, 14, 15, as this was developing and onward. And if we don't get these issues right, if we don't find a way to provide more opportunity for folks in this community, kind of like what we were just talking about, to improve their education, to certainly to be healthy and to get a good job, then we're not going to grow as a city. We're not going to have the opportunity and quality of life we want for everybody in this community. And so he really, you know, put that stake in the ground. And he did that by building on work that was had already been done in this community, really as far back as 2005, 2006. Mayor Mae Jackson, who's Andrea Bearfield's mother, had developed the Waco Community Visioning Project. What do we want to see Waco be in the future? That had led to work like Virginia Dupuy, the next mayor's Greater Waco Community Education Alliance, which tried to really drive energy around improving public education broadly, but public education in particular, and making sure the community understood that this is a community effort to get good educational outcomes for kids. And those types of collaborative efforts had really just built steam, built momentum over time. And Mayor Duncan said, there's a lot of good stuff going on. We've got to tie it all together, and we've got to figure out a way to be very strategic, very purposeful in driving this work so that all the goodwill here, all the good work that's being done really builds on each other to get the best possible results for people.
And how would you assess the results of that collaboration over the last 10 years or so?
Yeah. You go back to organizations like CEOs for Cities and these national convenings where folks from cities all over the country are coming together. And, you know, the group of us that goes to those types of events from Waco consistently hears really positive things about what's going on in Waco. I mean, it's really encouraging that people from other cities, especially bigger cities, are saying, man, how does a city Waco size do what you're doing? When we talk about the level of collaboration, some of the initiatives that we've taken on, you know, some of the innovative type things we're trying to do in this community, we just get lots of feedback. And it's funny, we talk about it with my staff when we go to different events and convenings around collective impact in particular, which is this model we're using within Prosper Waco. You know, we're always looking for the next idea and who's doing good work and trying to steal from them and learn from them. But what we get a lot of is people asking us questions and saying, man, you all seem to be doing great stuff. Tell us what you're doing. And we're certainly happy to share, but we're also like, but we want to know how we can get better, and we want to steal from other people. But a lot of good feedback on that kind of stuff.
You're hearing from Dr. Matthew Polk. He's the executive director of Prosper Waco, which has three real initiatives to attack health, education, financial security for Wacoans. Let's talk about the health component. What is Prosper Waco doing to make our community healthier?
Yeah. Well, again, I always go back to Prosper Waco being a community initiative. So the idea is that, you know, these big picture issues that communities face, like public health outcomes and that type of thing, you only move the needle on those if you're working together. If you've got a bunch of different stakeholders, a bunch of different partners kind of pulling in the same direction. So, you know, I always want to be clear with folks that when we say, well, what is Prosper Waco doing? It's not about one organization with a silver bullet. It's about a community effort. And our job as the staff is to kind of stir the pot, is to drive that community effort to make sure that people are talking to each other and looking at the best ways to collaborate. So one example of that, for example, that we have talked about a number of times over the last couple of years is the McLennan County Community Health Worker Initiative, which came out of the Prosper Waco Collective Impact process, came out of various working groups and collaborative conversations that folks were having around health in the community. But at this point is being led by and driven by the Waco-McLennan County Public Health District. So there's a community health worker coordinator at the health district who supervises about a dozen community health workers who work on the ground across four high-need zip codes in Waco. And a community health worker is simply a community member. They're not a healthcare provider. They're not a trained healthcare person, but they're a community member who has received some basic training in health and the healthcare system, and then has relationships with individuals in their community, their neighborhood, their church, whatever it might be, who can help people navigate, make decisions about their health and their healthcare options, and really be a bridge between the community and the healthcare system. And this is a highly collaborative project that doesn't just include the public health district. It includes our two hospital systems, Providence and Hillcrest. It includes the Family Health Center. The Waco Foundation is playing a role as a fiscal agent for a large grant that was provided to this collaborative group from the Episcopal Health Foundation down in Houston. And we, as the Prosper Waco Initiative staff, help kind of coordinate and facilitate this process to really develop this collaborative approach to use this innovative approach to community health, where we're not saying that we need more healthcare. What we're saying is we need to develop a process by which community members are able to get the information they need and figure out the path they need to take to get the healthcare that's available in this community. So it's not a matter of not having enough healthcare or not having good healthcare in Waco. It's a matter of that people don't know how to access that in the best way, don't know what they can and can't afford, don't know which door to knock on to get the healthcare they need. Community health workers are a proven intervention that have been used in other communities to address that issue. We are able to make that happen here through this collaborative process of a bunch of different partners.
Educating people about the resources around them is incredibly important. And educating kids in the classrooms, that's also important. Yeah. It's been in the news recently because Waco ISD trustees just approved the application and contract to build an in-district charter system alongside Prosper Waco. What are some of the plans for that?
Yeah, so the logic of that, certainly it came from state legislation and some accountability issues that the district was facing. And so there were a lot of things to kind of work around and work through in terms of state requirements. But the basic logic of partnership between the school district and Prosper Waco is that the Prosper Waco Initiative is about this community commitment to improving outcomes in the areas of education, health, and financial security. So, we've tried to be clear all along that as an organization, Prosper Waco wasn't created to run schools or to operate charter schools. What we were created to do was to be this hub to bring partners from throughout the community together to solve really difficult challenges. And there's no bigger challenge than the state of Texas saying we're going to shut down five Waco ISD campuses if they don't improve their results. And so there's not a silver bullet to that, but what we as the Prosper Waco team are looking at is what is our role in pulling the community together to address this issue, getting churches on board to increase volunteerism and mentoring, getting nonprofits on board to better provide services and supports to the kids and families on these campuses, doing whatever we can do to help improve and support the level of instruction going on in the classroom, and really looking at it from a holistic perspective to say this is not just about a teacher and a student. That's a lot of it, and it's important that really good instruction happens in the classroom. But Waco ISD and Dr. Nelson are working hard on that already. But there are a bunch of other issues that go into getting good educational outcomes for kids.
I went to Texas A&M after having graduated from a classical liberal arts Christian, private school in Dallas. And a lot of my best friends at A&M were from Lake Highlands. And they'd gone to Lake Highlands High School, which is very diverse. And the kids that I met at A&M from Lake Highlands were the most well-adjusted, kind, unflappable souls I've ever encountered. And it is because they got such a diversity of people when they were in school that I didn't have. So I appreciated the fact that their parents were willing to send them to that, and that they learned so much. I mean, they took that opportunity and said, hey, like, there are people who are way different than me, and I can learn from them. Here's the ways that I can do that. Mm-hmm. So I love that approach. The final component, and we'll wrap up here, is the financial security. That's mm-hmm. really what Prosper Waco is trying to educate people on. How are you achieving that goal?
Yeah, I mean, so the big picture outcome of all of this Prosper Waco work is that we have a more financially secure community, that fewer people live in poverty, that economic development increases. And so I tell people all the time that when you're doing poverty alleviation, you're doing economic development at the same time, and vice versa. It's all related. So I look at all this Prosper Waco stuff is not just about attacking poverty, but about improving economic development and opportunities for folks. So there are a lot of different ways that's going on, looking at youth employment issues, pulling together a large number of organizations that are all trying to get young people started in their career or in jobs through training, mentorships, internships, those kinds of things, trying to coordinate how they're working together, how they're reaching out to young people to make sure students aren't slipping through the cracks, especially if they graduate high school or leave high school and don't have a plan to go on to college, trying to smooth that path so that more students end up in the types of programs that get them started in the workplace successfully. We're working on that. We have a project that's highly collaborative called the Waco Employer Resource Network, where we're trying to connect, kind of bridge the gap between social service agencies that work with people who are looking for jobs, bridge the gap between them and employers who are looking to employ people, and then also helping employers see that there is benefit to connecting their employees who may have some challenges in their life to the various services and supports that are available in this community, especially through the nonprofit sector, and recognizing that that's a win-win, because when an employer connects their employee to some supports that helps them maintain stability, they're more likely to be a good employee. They're more likely to keep their job. They're more likely to show up to work. And at that point, everybody wins. So that's an important project. We're working with a group of banks and financial institutions to work together strategically to do outreach to folks who maybe aren't using the traditional banking system, or maybe relying on check cashing or payday loan type services that can be very expensive and can kind of get people stuck financially. And so we're working with some banks to do targeted outreach so that folks understand that, hey, there's an option for you here in the banking system that's good for you, that's low cost, that won't kind of get you stuck in a cycle of debt like some other options will. And so those are the types of collaborative projects we're working on around employment, around helping people maintain employment, as well as helping people just move forward financially, save money, understand how best to kind of navigate the financial system.
Matthew, you said that you've been traveling around and other city leaders want to know what's happening in Waco, what's in the water here. When you look at Waco, and you're very familiar with its present, but when you look towards its future, in 30 seconds, tell me, what kind of city do you want Waco to become?
I think you already said it best, is that inclusive and innovative, you know, forward looking, looking at how do we do what we do as a city, as a community better all the time. I think that type of mentality, you know, there are always folks who like things the way they are and are comfortable and want to maintain the quality of life they have. But I think when you look at it from the big picture perspective, as a city, as an entire community, we have to constantly be looking at how do we do what we do better. And that's from the standpoint of the way the city itself operates as the city government, from the standpoint of the way, you know, our businesses and nonprofits operate, from the standpoint of the way we do education, the way we provide opportunity to people from all different kinds of backgrounds, because people are coming to Waco. They want to move to Waco. We've got this energy, whether it's Fixer Upper or Baylor or whatever that's drawing them, and we have to take advantage of that. And we have to be thinking about not just, okay, you're here now, you know, welcome, but we have to think about how do we engage people? How do we give them opportunity? How do we create innovative ways to grow our economy? All those things. You know, Dylan Meek, our city councilman, says that the word he uses to describe Waco right now is strategy or strategic. You know, and I think we need to continue to be that way. Let's be strategic about how we want to grow, about how we want to attract people to this community, how we want to provide opportunity for people, especially for people who are struggling. But also people who are entrepreneurial and want to be successful in this community. And I think as long as we continue to have that mentality, then good things will happen.
Dr. Matthew Polk, Executive Director of Prosper Waco, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks again to Dr. Matthew Polk, Greg Gleim, the fine folks at the Jockey Club and American Bank, and to you for tuning in. It's always exciting to hear from listeners, and personally, I think it's impossible to share too many stories about good things happening in our community. And please get in touch on wacobusinessnews.com or on social media, and let me know what you want to learn in next month's installment of What's Happening Here. I'm Austin Meek of Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.